The front page of Rupert Murdoch's conservative New York Post today speaks volumes with its headline, Florida Man Makes Announcement, page 26. That would mean former President Trump, who tried to overturn his loss in 2020, has now made it official that he is running for re-election in 2024.
Our country is in a horrible state. We're in grave trouble. This is not a task for a politician or a conventional candidate. This is a task for a great movement.
Trump's announcement came a week after a midterm election where several high-profile 2020 election-denying candidates he endorsed and campaigned for went down in defeat. Our political strategists join us to talk about where things stand. Antoine Seawright is an advisor to the Democratic National Committee and Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and a CBS News contributor. Hi, Antoine.
Hey there, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. And Matt Makowiak is a Republican strategist in Austin, Texas. Welcome, Matt.
Hey there, thanks.
So let's jump right into this Trump announcement. Give us your thumbnail sketch, Matt. What did you see and hear in Trump's speech last night? Also, why is he doing this now without even some of his family there?
Yeah, it was a little bit of an unexpected, performance in a sense. Number one, he seemed a little bit less aggressive, even less grievance-filled than he has been in the past. So perhaps that's a modest improvement. The timing is a little odd, given that most Republicans at the national level are fully focused on the critical U.S. Senate race in Georgia. A 51-49 majority for the Dems is different than a 50-50 majority as it relates to committee splits and moving judges forward and, you know, procedure on the floor and all kinds of things. It may not seem like one seat matters, but it does. Trump's speech overall, I don't know how much effect it has, except that it now starts the 2024 presidential primary cycle. He's obviously now raising money for his campaign. Presumably he'll be doing some campaigning and getting out there more. And it sort of forces some of the potential presidential candidates on our side, Ron DeSantis, Ted Cruz, Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley, and others to now contend with Trump if they are going to get in.
Well, some of Trump's potential 2024 challengers had their own messages ready in response. President Biden tweeted out a campaign-style ad attack, attacking Trump with his own words.
And if I win, we will treat those people from January 6th fairly. And if it requires pardons, we will give them pardons.
And Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis called Trump's announcement, quote, noise, and contrasted Trump's losses with his own big wins.
You know, at the end of the day, I would just tell people to go check out the scoreboard from last Tuesday night.
All right. You're both political professionals. What are you feeling right now? I mean, what are you dreading most about what lies ahead and what worries you most? Antoine, you first.
Well, I don't dread anything because I think the American people spoke loud and clear about the type of country they want to have, and they want to put democracy first. What I saw last night was a man who the floor is literally slipping away from him in real time. You had a man who ran for president and tapped into disaffected voters in this country. He used right-wing red meat, toned-down racial rhetoric to draw a group of people to him. That movement grew, that small group of people grew into a movement known as MAGA. And what has happened as a result of the MAGA movement, the right-wing extreme election-denying insurrection supporters have hijacked the Republican Party. But the American people rejected that all over the country, up and down the ballot on Tuesday night. And so what Trump is trying to do is re-energize that crowd. Hopefully he thinks that will scare people away in a Republican presidential primary. Mm-hmm. And that's for the Republicans to fight out. I think Republican voters all over this country are going to have to decide what they want their party to be. And then general election voters, whoever comes out of that primary, will decide what they want their country to be. The reason I am so enthusiastic about the idea of a Trump running in a Republican primary, this is really going to put a real test to the Republican voters and what the center of their party looks like. And I think that's good for Democrats because we will have an opportunity to do a contrast, a compare and contrast to the Republican Party and present that to the voters as we did on Tuesday night.
Matt, you're a Republican strategist. Will the party unite behind Trump if he becomes a front runner, do you think?
Not anytime soon, I don't think. Certainly there's, I don't know, a third, let's call it a third of the Republican base that's very strongly behind Trump. That number was probably two-thirds when he was in office, perhaps even higher. We've had, you know, a lot of evidence now over the last 2 years to consider. And when he was president, when he was running for re-election, he was, you know, the unquestioned leader of the Republican Party. When you're in the minority, you don't really have a leader. And right now we've seen in early state polling that Club for Growth ran in Iowa and New Hampshire that Ron DeSantis of Florida is ahead of Trump. The Texas Republican Party did a poll in Texas that showed DeSantis ahead of Trump. There's a lot that has to happen. It's obviously very, very early. But Trump has to show that he's grown. And I don't know that he showed that necessarily the other night. He's made some bad endorsements. He left $94 million unspent to help his candidates. He's got legal problems. He's got financial problems. He could even have health problems. And I think Republicans are desperate to take the White House back in 2024. And so we have to look at whether Trump can win, whether other candidates are stronger, what candidates' strengths and weaknesses are. Trump's going to have to expand his appeal beyond what he's done in the past. If he just wants to run on his base, I think there's a chance, perhaps a 40% chance, that DeSantis or someone else can ultimately be the nominee.
I want to move to New York. And Antoine, on CNN this morning, South Carolina Congressman and party leader Jim Clyburn was asked if Democrats need to change strategies because Republicans were competitive there, you know, unexpectedly so. Let's take a listen.
Well, we got to modify our approach in a lot of places. Look, we lost seats up in New York, as you said, that we had no idea we would lose. We got to take a look at that and see, why did we lose?
And what's your answer to that question? You're their advisor, Antoine.
Well, the majority whip is a political father of mine and a mentor, so I don't disagree. Two things happens in campaigns. You either win and you learn. Most of the time when you win, you don't always learn because you think what happened worked. But in this case, we have a lot to learn and glean from this election cycle, not just in New York, but in other places around the country, including the places we won. I do think redistricting played a tremendous role in what happened in a lot of places around the country as relates to congressional races and state legislative races. I also think that we, in a lot of places, allowed the opposition party to define our message on some of the issues that they did not have a message on. And New York was one of those things. They took this idea of crime and tried to use that as a way to beat us down and drum us down and define who we are as Democrats, whereas it was truly the Republicans who have advocated for defunding things like the FBI, voted against mechanisms that will essentially deal with crime in a real authentic way. And we did not address those things early enough and often enough.
Just want to ask you quickly, it is being leveled at Democrats that the progressive voice of the party was too loud in New York, which put off suburban voters. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that statement. I think the one thing you saw with Democrats around the country is that we came together as Democrats. No matter what wing of the party you fall under the umbrella of Democrats, we came together so that there was no progressive versus moderate versus yellow dog versus blue dog. It was just Democrats coming together. And that's what happens in a general election. What I will say to this idea that some in our party have used their voices and platforms as if they represent the party, but I think the country's loud and clear with the races we won that we're still a center-left party by and large in the majority. And I think that what others have to understand is that what they say and do can be used against all of us in the court of public opinion with voters. And I think we have to learn to yell in the places we agree and whisper in the places we disagree and do those things in private.
Let's head back to Washington for a moment. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy won a leadership vote yesterday, but he does not have the votes right now to win the speakership in January.
Look, we have our work cut out for us. We've got to have a small majority. We've got to listen to everybody in our conference.
Matt, what are you watching for here?
Yeah, not unusual to have 31 votes against in the conference vote. I think Pelosi had 32 votes against, I think, 8 years ago. Paul Ryan, I think, had 43 votes against, whatever that was, 3 or 4 years ago. He now has, you know, 6 weeks to get from whatever 218 minus 31 is to 218. He's got to get from here to there. And there's going to be some horse trading related to steering committee, some procedural things on the floor. He'll have a pathway. And the biggest reason he has a pathway is no one else has a pathway. The party, you know, that was a free vote. That was a secret vote held, you know, without anyone attaching their name to it. I think there's probably 8 or 10 people that are pretty hardcore against McCarthy right now. He's going to have to negotiate with them and win their support without losing the support of other members. But I strongly expect he'll do that. That said, governing the House is going to be extraordinarily difficult if they have 219, 220, or 221 members, a 1-3 or 4 seat majority. It's going to be a very, very difficult 2 years to do things like raise the debt limit, keep government spending going, pass the commitment to America, and then work with the Senate Democratic majority, which appears to be 50-50 plus the vice president, or perhaps 51-49 if Warnock wins re-election in the runoff.
Be so interesting to watch. Matt Mikowiak is a Republican strategist. Antoine Seawright is a Democratic strategist, both giving us great information today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.